Welcome to Natural Recovery from Suffering. This is Scott Killaby, and I have my co-author with me today again, Toshi Matsunaga.
Hi, Scott.
Hey,
Thanks.
Toshi. It's always a pleasure to have Toshi. Toshi and I talk every day. We wrote this book together, so there's a real synergy around non-duality, mindfulness, and of course the bypass. We wrote this book, and we've just released it What it's been a well, I don't know when you're listening to this podcast, but we released the book on March 14th. Since then, we've been really wanting to just get on podcast and say everything that we didn't put into the book. There's just so much that we can expound upon with regard to the subject matter. And today we chose a topic that we think might appeal to people even beyond the there's kind of across the world, there are people who go to non-dual teachings, like the kind of teaching that I did for years. But I've noticed in the last maybe 20 years, I want to share this with you, Toshi, and see if this is helpful for the conversation. When I opened the treatment centers almost over a decade ago, at that point, we were the first mindfulness addiction treatment center and mental health center in the country to focus on mindfulness. And of course, we were also focusing on non-dual awareness and somatic experiencing. But when we opened the treatment center, I remember thinking to myself, why are we the first one? Why? I mean, there's mindfulness all over the place, or it was starting to be there, but there was no center that focused on it. And I thought to myself, I think mindfulness is going to be very popular. And then within a few years, you get on the internet and mindfulness and be here now and all that stuff has become kind of mainstream. So I think the reason that Toshi and I wanted to do this podcast is to talk to that large audience out there and tell you some things about mindfulness that we know that your mindfulness practitioners and teachers might not tell you about it. Because, well, I think the topic that we want to focus on today is, well, what is mindfulness? And then, does mindfulness end our suffering? Questions like that. Or what does it do for us? And does it have a bypass in it? So I want to start. Yeah, I know Toshi's probably chomping at the bit to say some things about this. But Toshi, did you ever practice just a mindfulness practice through the years? Did you ever remember studying with somebody, or was that part of your path specifically?
Yeah, I mean, I do have a Buddhist cultural background and things like that in the conversation as well. And I didn't know I was doing specific mindfulness practices, but I was taught to be aware of your breath. I've learned to be aware of your thoughts and all those things too, just naturally, really. And it does, and I did, study a little bit of Buddhism and Zen Buddhism, things like that. So, mindfulness to me covers a lot of area and has, it touches a lot of different traditions, covers mindfulness really, just to be here, to notice what's really here. So, yeah, I think I know a bit about it, but I don't know. But there's so many people use the word mindfulness, and we don't, I have to almost look up what it actually means in the mainstream terms. But, it does seems like, it's just to be aware, to be mindful of what is really happening here. So, yeah.
That's a good point before we talk about it. Because what is it? If it's even used in the mainstream now, I hear people saying like, oh, be mindful of that, which is like, remember that, or remember. And that's not really how mindfulness was taught. It wasn't, but in the mainstream, because people don't have a practice, I suppose they pick up a word and they start to use it in a way that maybe it wasn't intended. I'm not an expert either, except that I've experimented with every form of mindfulness that I could find and create. I mean, I've created training programs and mindfulness programs and all that. So I'm not an expert, but the one of the questions is, what is it? Because it's been used and kind of changed through the public domain. So I would like to define it a little bit before we start. Is as one Buddhist practitioner told me, it's like it's the quality of attention that you bring to what arises. And I understand that it's not just observing thoughts, feelings, and sensations. There's a certain quality of attention with it. And they talk a lot about that. And just the allowing of it, the observing of it. I think that's a good enough way to talk about mindfulness, because then it allows us to talk about the bypass right there. Because I don't think, here's my point, Toshi. I don't think that anyone needs to actually explore mindfulness deeply to know that it's a bypass, because you're not, I mean, once you start getting into the body, it's no longer really mindfulness. And so my whole thing is, almost any form of mindfulness that doesn't go to the unconscious would surely contain a bypass, no matter what form it is. It's a simple matter of, is the unconscious being accessed or not? What do you think about that?
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, as soon as we go into our body, you really can't help but to start to see. You can't be mindful doing mindfulness, basically. You can't truly be mindful of things when there's unconscious things that's around. Like, how can I be a mindful of things that I don't know about because it's in unconscious? So you become mindful of the fact that you can't be mindful, or just you can't get there with just being aware or just being mindful of things, because it's, I guess it's again the myth awareness where, if you're mindful of something, everything's arising. So if you, as long as you're mindful, you can notice things. But no, when you start to come down to the body, like you say, to the sensations, you really start to see how much unconscious stuff is running your lives and stuff like that. Yes, you can be mindful of the fact that you're not mindful. I think that's a good start. So I think mindfulness is a very good starting point, like for everyone. If you've never done it, I'll recommend it. But do not stop there, because when you stop there, it can be a bypass. Because it's nice, it kept, we'll talk more about getting your pleasure, getting your needs met, and all that stuff through mindfulness. But it's a good place to be aware of your breath. If you never stop, then just recognize your breath. Oh, there's a thought and there's a sensation in your body. It's a very good place to start. And even in KI, we ask people to be able to at least tune into that, but do not stop there. Is yeah, what I say. Yeah.
Definitely. You know, the picture that I want to paint is, if everybody listening could just imagine, there's an arena full of people who are interested in mindfulness, or they're already doing it. Just imagine that for a second. And the thing that you don't know is how much buried rage is there. You don't know it because it's buried. And all of those people who are mindful of their thoughts and feelings don't know it, that the buried hurt and anger is there. They don't know that the reason that they're mindful at the surface is because it keeps them safe from the buried rage and anger. So I don't even think it's about arguing about modalities. It's about, do you know you have repression? That's what I want to focus on, because and then repression doesn't arise to be mindful of.
Yeah. And to us, if you're not getting to the repression, you're not, anything else is a bypass to be honest. It has to be, it sounds quite, I don't know how else to say it, like sharp, and but it's also clear, because we are very clear that if you're not getting to it, there's a reason why you're not getting to it. And that's bypass, or you're getting something from it rather than what's really here, because we've learned, yeah.
It's so true. I mean, what's coming up for me, Toshi, is the compassion from Buddhism. And my compassion comes because there are so many people who don't know that they're raging and hurt from childhood, and they're walking around trying to be mindful and to meditate, if they only knew where it all came from. And I think that's the thing I want to impress upon, the compassion that I feel for myself, for you, for people who have no idea. You know, they just don't know that the reason that we're drawn to mindfulness is because of the buried emotions.
I just say, what about the compassion to the buried part of us? If only we could have compassion towards that. It's not that we're gonna we have you know we have compassion per se, but because it's be so, if you repress emotions, we can only use compassion to be nice or to do something, so we don't have to feel buried emotion. We don't have to feel all these uncomfortable feelings or emotions that we don't want to feel. But where's the compassion for that sort of thing, isn't it? That's how it came up for me, actually. Because compassion is the case. That's my experience now. The more I work on myself, this conditioning starts to fall away. When I start to move as myself authentically, I'm naturally compassionate. But that doesn't mean I'm always necessarily nice or kind. It comes in many different forms, because kindness doesn't always help. Sometimes boundaries, strong words, that's real compassion. And I feel it from people as well, because I always look for compassion from people, but that had a huge kind of agenda to it. It has to come in this certain package. It has to be nice, welcoming, spiritual. Then, yeah, okay, I can expect that as a compassion. But now, the whole life, it's just the compassion is the case already, you know? It's only the repression that is in the way or something. So, yeah.
100%. I want to take you back because I think I want to make this really experiential for people. I'm going to take you back to my days before the realization, because you said that sometimes what's needed is not just kindness, especially if it's false, but authenticity. So here I was as an attorney and I could not face conflict, but I put myself in this role where there's conflict everywhere. So instead of actually dealing with the conflict with the people, I picked up a spiritual practice to witness the thoughts and feelings that were my suffering coming from my buried anger. So I look back and I go, wow, I mean, that's the compassion, because I couldn't deal with conflict and I was in that profession. And I think that's what people do, is like we can't deal with relationship. We don't know that the reason that we're being mindful is to try to cope with what we can't deal with in relationship. And then the other thing I want to say, did you have that kind of practice where you were using spirituality in a way on the side to stay safe from something in relationship? I guess I want to ask that.
Yeah, I mean, everything to do with spirituality was that. I didn't know at the time, of course, but I can see now how, again, in the maybe last time I spoke of, but maybe the previous three, it just, it's best way, it takes the takes all the box in one go, you know? It's like, especially if I repress an anger, everything I want from life, from relationship is there to be, to keep my anger down, like to stay kind, to stay nice, stay spiritual. To stay small, all these things that, it just takes off, As long as I'm mindful of myself, it's okay. It's just like, stay small. It's okay. It's not about them, it's about myself and all those things I could do. And but I didn't know I was doing that. And it felt good because I managed to keep my fear of anger down. Just because that fear is everywhere. I didn't know this at the time. But that if you repress emotions, that means you're scared to be yourself. That means you're scared most of the time in your life. I didn't know this.
Yeah.
So every time you get your needs met by pushing the anger down, it just feels so good. It's so soothing. Oh yeah, of course. And compassion, like, yeah, I'm nice. And I'm not denying that's part of life, yes. But it's so much, almost too much emphasis on that. And it almost have a license to kind of ignore everything as long as I'm kind and nice and it was in my world, it was my world to kind of or create a world like that to have a huge license for me to bypass as using things that is nice, kind to people, all that stuff. And I'm not saying kindness is bad, but I had to use it for something. So, it was hurting me. It wasn't hurting anybody else,
Yeah.
maybe, but yeah, that's what I've got
It's,
to say. Yeah.
I think if people could do this work and they would see what we're talking about, is the kindness becomes like the spiritual ego. And the way it happened for me is I already was against all the angry people in the world, the bullies and everything. So when I came and picked up a mindfulness approach, it was reinforcing that I'm a kind and peaceful person that doesn't have anger. So this was really unhealthy for me in relationship and in life, to actually strengthen the idea that I'm just need to be peaceful, or that I am peaceful, because it strengthened a duality that was already there for me. Did that happen for you?
It's like I taught myself kindness is like the natural state, So if I really tune into myself, that's who I already am. But yeah, of course it was because I didn't want to be angry. But sometimes you can't be kind, and that's not kind. Or being kind at all costs is not kind, And it's just like it's just an idea and thoughts basically. But we just put all our energy and trauma onto it, and it just feels so true. And then I will defend it to death, the fact that you have to be kind. And I can argue to death with how niceness and kind will get me love, That's what it's about. And it's very convincing, especially when I'm, really scared of it, to feel what's opposite of that, which is not kind. Being not kind I associated with being angry or violent or being big or not taking care of others, all that stuff, So it's like, no, that's not me. I couldn't even feel that because I was so good at pushing all that down as I was growing up. So it's really about not being kind, So I was more
It's
identified with not being kind than being kind, unconsciously though.
Right. Well, what happened? I mean, when I sit here and talk to you, I can see how really unhealthy it was because, I mean, you had that experience too, where kindness and empathy becomes the subtle identification or not so subtle identification of an anger repressor who's mindful. And then when I get into relationship, I take that quote unquote compassion and I put it on my partners. It's like, can you just be more mindful? Which is a way of saying, can you fucking stop? It's control. But I couldn't own it because it was so compassionate on the surface, so kind. Anything to share around that in your relationships?
It's I was really shocked when I in inquiry one day I saw, maybe I shared this with you, that how violence is kindness is, like I just kind of shared it, like, or kindness or niceness or whatever. I used to always say it's okay, it's okay, when it's not fucking okay, excuse my language, but I used to do that all the time, thinking that's what people want to hear, or that's what, that's what's gonna solve the problem. But when I clearly saw all I was doing that so that I don't have to feel something, that's nothing else. It's not to do with them or anything else. As long as that person's okay, then I don't have to be, I'll be okay, because I don't have to feel my anger or any conflicts between people. And that's selfish, or that's violence, to say when it's not okay, to say it's okay, it's okay. And so it gets really mixed up there, and how harmful it can be, and nicest people can be the most violent people, maybe.
It's true. I mean, it's probably really unpopular to the people who are cultivating that compassion for buried anger, but it is really true. And if we don't take responsibility, we don't have good relationships. I can't speak for people out there, but how my relationships went were either they didn't work because I wasn't authentic. They just didn't work. Or I never went deep with anyone because, and it didn't work because you can't when you bring that falseness into relationship. It looks spiritual, but it can't connect. And I learned the hard way that repression is the root of it. If I don't process that, it doesn't, no, it's not, I can't even say it doesn't matter how mindful it is. The mindfulness gets in the way of being authentic.
Exactly, because if you're using mindfulness, it's only about repression. It's never about us as beings, it's always about repression. And it's yeah it's it could ne you know we could never fully connect or be here right now to actually listen, or to support, or to not listen. Just you can't, because we already have agenda. And that is to keep our emotions down at all costs, whatever, however way. And most of us, especially angry repressors, learn to be kind at all costs, or be nice at all costs, and that's so hard to spot that. And the whole world is spinning on that, it's like, but that doesn't mean you're not gonna be, that doesn't mean me and you, Scott, is not nice anymore. It's different, because it's not like you don't have to be nice. And if there's energy of I have to, so that I don't have to feel something, there's a huge difference. And there's already identification there already of what you're doing or what you're trying not to do, or all of that. So we're not really here for anybody. I'm never really here in my relationship with anybody. If all I'm doing is to avoid emotions, that's what I was doing. It looked like from outside, oh, Toshi is like, understanding, caring about everyone else, and but it's just there so that I don't have to feel something. But when you really start to see that, you can really kind of take ownership of that. So, but when I stopped doing that, not completely, but nowadays I can actually feel I'm more available, and if I want to be kind, I can really be kind, not from fear of emotions. I can actually do it without agenda, and it's okay. I'm not really looking for results. It's more about the expression of the kindness rather than getting something out of kindness. But when you're repressed, you have to get something out of it, and you don't even know you're getting something out of it. And that's a scary place to, if you could see that, out there.
I mean, if there can be authentic anger, I think there can be authentic kindness. One thing I've looked for, as you know, in my professional relationships is that I want people to be able to get angry at me. And you know that, and you and I have been angry at each other before. But what it did is it connected us more, because if we were always kind to each other when we have issues with each other, that's disconnecting. And as long as you can tolerate that emotion in a relationship, you can go deeper. All of my relationships have gone deeper through both, but through authenticity, authentic anger, but then, like you say, kindness, it's authentic because I don't have to hold anything in. How can kindness be authentic if I'm also holding things in that I need to say to you or you to me?
And it is amazing, like, in our relationship as well, it's not really about the content anymore. It's about whether you're expressing that not or not, like you say, so you're not holding anything back. And then we can actually talking about communicating. But if you're holding back things, we can't really communicate or connect, and because we've been there as well, we smell each other's repression a lot more than others, I guess. So yeah, but
Yeah. Well, another thing, I want to go deeper into this because as I sit with you, I think of how people in Buddhism or who do mindfulness think about relationship and just the subject of peace. This is something that I didn't understand because of my anger repression. When I was always trying to bring a situation to peace, that was me trying to avoid my anger, but I couched it in a lot of different ways that weren't about anger. So you can use spirituality to, like, use the topic of compassion or empathy to think that that's a code of conduct that you have to do, you have to be a certain way. And that's not freedom to be a certain way, even if the way that you're being is spiritual, because it isn't what you are. So if you go into a relationship because you have buried anger, and peace is really important, it's that's not that's about you. That has nothing to do with the relationship, but I understood. I thought that peace was objectively it was the objective. I thought that was always the objective, in a sense, with my anger repression. Can you relate to that?
Yeah, it's amazing when you say that there's a real safety there, isn't it? Like objective of the peace. And they just, if you're still fearful of your emotions, gives you a lot of kind of hope or something, isn't it? As long as I'm doing this, I get the peace or something, like a almost like a carrot, dangling sort of feeling of like, yeah.
Yeah.
And but relationship. And we're trying to put labels or something that is on something that is continuously flowing. That's how I see it. The more I go deeper into myself and see my life from this much more authentic place, everything's a relationship, but relationship is just always flowing, it's fluid constantly. So how can I even think a piece is like a static, a stamp on it or something like that? It's already feels
Right.
impossible to it. But we need to land somewhere, because just flowing and fluid it is not, because anger might suddenly come if things are just flowing. So we have
Right.
to s block everything to be land everywhere to make sure, we conclude something or, the solidity we need, and that gives us that safety. And peace, compassion, kindness, all that is a huge landing that's so easy to miss. That's what I mean by license, it's easy to miss it, because we can associate with our true self or something, or in religious terms, but
Yeah.
we get really stuck in that because it's scary, to
Yeah.
not be like that. So yeah.
Well, which makes me want to say this, which I can surely think that some people would be triggered by this, but the peace is control. It's a need for safety and love. And anger repressors are demanding their environment to be a certain way and will not own it. So if you go to an ashram and everybody's really quiet, that's a demand being placed in the environment by repression. And it's hard to talk to people in that environment when they're demanding safety and not owning it. I mean, I've seen it in my own relationship where peace is the most important thing, and it's a demand for safety. Don't get angry at me. That is not peace. That is actually violence. So, but that's hard to explain to people when they have the demand for safety that they call peace or mindfulness. It's a demand for safety, but it's unconscious.
And especially in Buddhism or any religious, like non-dual based religions, because of the lack of words of the truth and everything else, peace can kind of fit into that. But if the mind grabs and use it for something, it just can't. That's why, again, it can be so confused. Again, it's a license, you can just use that. You can kind of force yourself to be a certain way when it's not, when it's just can't be described or something.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, the truth that I'm experiencing now, you could say it's peaceful to a point, but it's nothing like, there's no energy behind it. There's no fear mixed,
Right.
because before it was always fear mixed, because if I'm not at peace, then I have to feel something. There's a fear there. So even if I manage to get that the peace, it's mixed with fear. So I can't, how can I say that's peace when it's based on fear?
Right.
That's what impression is, It's always based on fear.
True. And also, I just want to remind everybody, because when they're listening to Toshi or me, they might not think that the peace is coming from fear. But I would encourage you to go to repressiontest.com and see if you have repression. And that's in your own body. And then there you can trust that there's something going on in your body that isn't what appears. And so, I mean, in other words, it is a need for safety in your body, the repression is. But you don't know it as long as you're only mindful of your experience until you go into repression and you start to see what's there. So I want to invite people to not hear this from the mind, because the mind manages safety and it could easily dismiss what we're saying by not going into the body. That's the bypass.
Exactly. And I mean, I could say, I mean, I just talked about peace, this peace, that, but I could say I'm at peace with myself more than any other time. But I don't have to be at peace. It's like peace is the case already. I don't know. It's one of the things that comes and goes in my relationship within myself, with other people,
Yeah.
within my life. It's something not. It's not a landing, it's not a solid thing that I can hold on to and keep it in my pocket. It just comes and goes as we flow as ourselves, So,
Yeah. Well, I want to break it down to practice now, because you mentioned relationship. And I don't know how you did relationship. You can tell me. But I've said this before on podcasts. If I would be triggered, I would pull away from the person because I couldn't express anger or my expression, really. When you have anger repression, when you're triggered, you just can't. So I'd pull away to my trusty spiritual practice, which was always based in mindfulness and not processing buried emotions. So I would go into my room and I would watch all these thoughts of, like, I'm wrong. And I'd feel hurt. And I would feel like I was really making this tremendous progress, because this hurt would be so big. And I would just sit there with it, but I could allow it. And then when I would allow it, there would be peace. And then the thoughts that were with it, they would go away. And then I would go back into my relationship, absolutely inauthentic, not having dealt with buried anger, ready to do it again. The same thing, and never get behind the triggers and why they were happening or why I couldn't be authentic. Do you have any experience with that in relationship?
I mean, it's been like that almost all my life to a point, it's just like you just keep doing things that you think is right, but then you just keep coming back to the same point of like a loop of same kind of it's almost like an addiction too, because when we get our needs met by when we when I don't want to feel anger and I feel the hurt or sadness instead, it just gives me like a deeper feeling of, yeah, of course, and it's soothing. And then obviously pain pleasure cycle, when you get your pleasure, if you're repressed, the pain will follow. And then you might go back to your relationship, but then again, it's going to go the exactly same way. And I ask myself, why is this keeps happening when I know I'm deliberately doing this unconsciously? I did that. I'm sure most of us did, but I did that for many, many years, not just romantic relationships, many relationships with money, work, everything, I make sure I set myself up so that I keep failing, but I keep chasing that pleasure to soothe it, and then I fail to get that pain, and then but that's how I stayed away from anger, but it's a bit of a I went quite far there, but
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the pleasure pain cycle. So I think we can break this down even more in terms of how mindfulness and certain inquiry practices are a bypass, if people can hear this. So you also, I think, you mentioned people pleasing, or I did. So very common anger repression thing. So think about it this way to the audience, and you too, Toshi. Of course, you already know this, but if I people please in a moment, it's an unconscious thing. I don't really know I'm doing it because it's so connected to the buried anger that it's almost synonymous with it. So when it happens, though, there's a reward, and the system gets the dopamine and other hit from the reward of love, approval, and safety, which further blinds me to the pattern. But my system is very aware at the unconscious level of the pattern and will produce people pleasing again to get the reward. And I saw that directly through the programming of I get love and approval and safety by people pleasing. You follow me on that?
Yeah, exactly. It's very clear
Yeah.
to me. Yeah.
Right. And then so therefore mindfulness couldn't show me that. I want to say that to everybody. It can't show us the pleasure pain cycle that creates our suffering in relationship because we don't feel the buried stuff. So when we're mindful, the most that we can be mindful of really are the triggers when we don't please people, frankly. And that's not a good spirituality to just do triggers when we're not pleasing people or getting love and approval from them. And that's how shallow it can be, frankly.
So you could, I could say in this way where mindfulness is the people pleasing. Basically, it's the
Yeah.
same thing. It's what we do to avoid
Yeah.
suffering. And it's so hard to spot that. It sounds quite clear, maybe simple now, but when you're feeling something in your body or not feeling something in your body, and things happening, and you're in a relationship, but things happen in relationship because, as you said, it's flowing, it's fluid. And we can't allow that because it's scary, because anger might come up or whatever it is. Then we have to people please, or we use anything. And we people please ourselves, maybe mindfulness. So, oh, I'm gonna be mindful to myself,
Yeah, because then I can avoid my buried emotions. So here's the other point. Once I realized, well, I'm suffering in relationship because, I'm people pleasing, but I'm also feeling unlovable when I don't please people. And then I realized that through doing mindfulness practices, that was the same thing. It was like I was surviving by just clearing the surface so that I could go people please again. So that sent the signal to my system, not only people please, but continue to bypass because you get benefit from both. Do you hear that? I saw that. I saw that my only way to use spirituality was to get to buried emotions because my system, the pleasure pain cycle, had hijacked the people pleasing and the bypass to make sure that I never got to buried anger.
It is. It's. Yeah, I mean, it can be so subtle. But the subtler, the more powerful it is. I don't know how to say it in English, but I don't know. It's, yeah, it's, we, yeah. It's it. The more we believe it, it's harder to spot it. And I don't know. We can reinforce that so much more by, I don't know, yeah. But when I say the more we believe it more because we're scared more. Too. So it's the closer we get to buried emotions, the fear will be stronger too. But relationship life will show that. So it's it's like almost like a, how do you say, a drug over a choice or something, or numbingness over a choice, and then
Yeah.
those awareness pointings, they become very soothing, very effective way. And the one, but the harder the spot, the better the drug it is,
Yeah.
So, and we keep learning to do that all our lives. Okay, what's the best one that I won't notice or something? That it's just the most stealthy,
Yeah. Yeah.
helping.
How can I hide it from myself? Exactly. Well, I also wanted to say, just what brings it up is because you're talking about fear, and what we discover here are these unmet needs for safety and love. And a lot of that is that fear where it's like, don't get angry at me, Toshi, and that kind of thing. But if people understood that mindfulness doesn't deal with needs, and because the needs are connected to buried emotions, so we're going around needing love and safety from everyone. That's what I want everybody to hear. And then when we don't get it, we get upset. And then we use spirituality quite often to bring us back to a homeostatic balance so that we can continue to get love and approval and safety from people. So I just want people to hear that because nobody says it.
Exactly. And the cycle continues.
Yeah. I mean, I lived it. It's not a, I just won't do it anymore because of so much suffering. Maybe that's the reason, or that's the ultimate teacher here. I don't know if we said it in the book, but even if you have a spiritual practice that gives you momentary peace or whatever, there's still going to be suffering, even if you cultivate that peace or compassion somewhere in your life. What do you say about that?
I mean, that's one of the most important topics for me, and it is in the book. I really wanted to stress it in the book because we talk about all this, but then how do we know, Scott? I'm trying to do my best. I'm trying to, be nice or not nice. And you say, you told me I'm trying to be nice. No, don't be nice because that's angry pressure. Because I could have spoke like this to you when I was unconscious, right? A lot more when I was repressed. So what can I do? Because I'm trying to do my best. I don't want to suffer anymore. I know, it's all this stuff. What I say is suffering will always let us know. If you're unconscious, the suffering will be there. And to me, unconsciousness and suffering is the same meaning to me. So if you're unconscious of not knowing what's going on, the suffering will definitely come. Whether you acknowledge your suffering is the big question, basically.
Can we go there? I don't want to cut you off. Whether you acknowledge your suffering, what do you mean by that?
So that was my big turning point, which I talk about in the book as well. Because when we are good at soothing ourselves, using mindfulness or people please, all that stuff, you get your pleasure met all the time as you grow up. Yeah, I feel good, I'm connected to people, I'm nice, people love me. You're getting your love and approval all the time, right? Yes, the suffering's bubbling, but I couldn't connect that to my suffering because then I'll have a compulsion towards getting high or whatever it is that I would do to soothe that. But they're all the same thing. So if you're young and have lots of energy and you're good at, not young necessarily, but old too, if you're really good at soothing yourself, if you're good at repressing your anger, then it's really hard to acknowledge that you're suffering until you start to get physical pains or physical conditioning or
That's it.
psychological depression and stuff. Then it's obvious that you're suffering. But I had some of that, but I even pushed that down to say, no, it's all right. I get stomach ache and chronic pain because I ate this or this happened to me. I was born with my intestine twist. That's why my stomach's not well. And depression, everyone's depressed in the world. I can come up with a thousand reasons why I'm not really suffering. But when I fully acknowledged the suffering through starting doing KI, then everything changed. And it wasn't something to avoid. It was a gift, or it was like an entry point. It's an invitation to actually look, because you cannot tell whether you're doing is unconscious or not. Only the suffering will let us know.
Yeah,
That's why
exactly.
in KI, we're not asking you to chase behaviors or personality or outcomes, because we're not saying this is right or this is wrong, or you should believe in this instead of this. No, no one knows what that is. Only you know when you live authentically.
Yes.
Only thing we can point to is your suffering. So I always ask them, Scott, what is your suffering? Then we can start the work. But if you don't really know what your suffering is, it's hard to start this work, I'm afraid,
Yes,
and
yes.
it's hard to, sometimes we say this, we joke about it, but you have to go out and then suffer more or acknowledge the suffering, because that's where your earnestness comes from. If you don't know your suffering, you'll never turn around to look, because you're always getting your needs met from everything you want to do, from mindfulness, from drugs, from porn, from loved ones, everything. Then you're okay. But there's something that's going on. The suffering will let us know. So although we talk about it, but you have to really, you should listen to your suffering more than us, but it's hard to do that unless there's people like us who's talking about it in this way too. So,
Yeah, I mean, that's why I talk about teachers who get sick or have pain or cheat on their spouse, not to pick on them, because I've done all that. I've had all that. I didn't cheat, but I have had those thoughts. Those are unmet needs. This is repression and trauma, according to the science, and we're not acknowledging our suffering. Or if we're doing it, we're announcing it publicly to get love and approval, but not necessarily being earnest about how our bypass contributed to it. That's an acknowledgement, a lack of acknowledgement that I think has to change. And one of the things I think we can do is encourage mindfulness to go deeper, because a lot of the teachers who do announce something like that are safety dealers. I mean, like I was, they're teaching a practice that doesn't get to repression. They're not acknowledging necessarily, or look, you just talk about ourselves. I didn't acknowledge that my diseases were coming from repression at first, but we have to acknowledge our own suffering. The reason I talk about other teachers is because it's a systemic issue and people are following us and we're not really acknowledging the root completely. And once you come out of repression, you don't mind saying those things because it's real compassion. It's not compassion to get love and approval. It's the kind of compassion that will just speak up if there's a lot of suffering and there's a new way. That's how I see it.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. And one of the biggest thing I used when the suffering came, when I felt like I was suffering, and then I was getting physical pain, and I was feeling depressed, but non-duality, wow, there's nobody suffering. That one quote, I could tick that off and just push, like unacknowledge my suffering. Oh yeah, there's nobody suffering. There's this thing called separate movement called Toshi, and there's suffering, so I'm not suffering. What a way to get away and not acknowledge suffering, so I don't turn around and look at myself, you know? And that's dangerous. That's, to me, that's actually dangerous. And that's what we point to in the book as well. Because we kind of sound like, oh yeah, if you want to do work, yeah, do this. But there is actually people who's in real pain, suicidal, suffering, and they don't know what to do. And that's what we really want to speak to people like that.
Yeah.
Because to hear teachers or pointers, non-dual pointers say there's nobody suffering, it's actually violence, it's dangerous.
Yeah.
Because when we're looking for something like that, to not acknowledge your suffering, when we need to turn around. But obviously it's scary to even look at that. I was there. You know, that's why I held on to that pointers, like there's nobody here. And that is the case. I don't even want to say this because it's just sad, because it's contradict what I'm saying. It is in the case, I guess, to a point, but it's still a thought. It's still, you can still identify with it. And when we are repressed, when the conditioning runs the show, not you as your true self. So let's look at that. Let's really start talking about that. And teachers got to speak about this and point to this, because it's dangerous. It's not a joke, you know?
Yeah, it's not because one thought can be a landing. And because we're driven by safety, if that one thought is a spiritual thought that keeps me safe, then I've landed in a way that becomes potentially dangerous for me. So I've seen it on the path. Like we teach people how to process buried emotions, but they come from spirituality where they're using processing to kind of feel better and to get their needs met. So one thought will take them out because they'll get some freedom here and then the thought will be self-protective, like I'm there or I'm doing good or I've got this. And that's one of the issues with anger repression, is that if I'm okay right now, if I'm safe, then I don't have to go any deeper into the unconscious and I can continue to get my needs met. But that means there's more suffering coming. And so somewhere on the path, if people can see that if these are, we can't just be mindful of thoughts without seeing where they come from, and that they have an agenda to keep us safe. If we want earnestness on the path, instead of letting one thought deter us from getting to the root, we can see those thoughts, even if they're spiritual thoughts. That's what we say in the book. Like, it doesn't matter to the unconscious whether you believe you're a loser or the most liberated person. To the unconscious, you're safe and you're going to get love.
Perfect. Yeah. And it is just one thought, isn't it? Like, you know, seasoned practitioner of KI, we all get caught up in this. It only takes one single thought to just land somewhere, and we'll defend it to death. Obviously the fear is up because we've been working on the repression, so the fear is gone up, and then, you know, we're just looking for a thought that could, you know, that we can land on to feel safe. And that can come so quickly. And yeah. But then again, how do we work with that? Suffering will let us know you will suffer if you know. So don't worry about it. But you know, we will learn to catch it much quicker. But yeah,
Yeah,
so yeah.
that's it. Okay, I think that wraps it up for me. I want to invite you back. It feels, if there's anything else you want to say, I was going to kind of take it into the spiritual path, but you kind of invited people, and I did, to just come and do this work because I think we're catching people and people are catching themselves. I don't know what you think about this. Maybe this is the last question because you and I mentor people, and I'm sure that you see it in what we call second phase, where some people get a certain amount of freedom. And it's just usually a spiritual thing. I've seen it. I've seen it with teachers that I've tried to train who become convinced that they're at a certain place and they're done, or just people afraid to go deeper. Well, I think on our path, as we mentor people, we can help them catch themselves on the spiritual landings that keep them safe from stuff. But out there, what would you say to people who, because I think I trust the path here on that, but there are people who aren't doing it. So what advice would you give? Maybe that's a different way to ask a question, to people out there who are just listening, who have a mindfulness practice, but are just hearing this message and aren't quite convinced of what we're saying. Anything you can say to them, just other than the suffering will teach you, because I think that's the best thing to say.
Yeah.
The suffering.
And it's okay. Everyone comes from that space. We all did. Me, Scott, you know, everyone comes. But so mindfulness is, again, I said in the beginning, where it's a very good entry point. Within KI, what we call 2D KI, that is mindfulness, basically. You have to be, to do KI, you have to be aware of your thoughts or sensations and, you know, all the awareness stuff. Not completely, but just to be able to notice that. That's like a basics of KI to be able to do that. So mindfulness is already included, but we don't stop there. So if you're doing mindfulness, you're in a good place already, but don't stop there. Let's go deeper, and we can really help you with that to really see what you're doing unconsciously as a whole, you know? Because we have to put everything on a chopping block then. You know, it won't just be a mindfulness, it will be everything that you're doing that we have to look at. But it's hard to do that, you know? So yeah, mindfulness is already included in the work, but we don't stop there. That's what we say, especially in the beginning stages. Yeah, we can, you know, we'll teach you to do mindfulness, to be with sensations and awareness, but this can become bypassed too. We never hide the ball. We always speak about the whole context. So you always know from the beginning that yes, this is, you know, you might be getting your needs met or soothing yourself, but this is a necessary part of the work to be able to see thoughts as thoughts or not see or listen or whatever it is. So yeah, that's what I want to say to people who's doing mindfulness. And yeah, don't be disheartened that you're doing good, but just check, are you using mindfulness so they don't have to feel something? Then we can really help you with that. Because you'll be suspecting, because you might be doing mindfulness, but there's suffering there too. Then that's a good place to be. Come and see us. We can show you know?
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's a good place to end it. And just let me tell everybody, the stuff that Toshi and I are doing, there's a lot, and we're trying to build an audience with a new modality. So in a way, I know that some of my old audience got left behind because they, for whatever reason, I moved into a different way of talking. But we're building an audience now, and here's a couple of things we're doing so everybody knows. We just released a book. We probably, Toshi would agree, the best thing to do if you're going to listen to us is read the book first, because it catches you up, at least intellectually, with the stuff that we're talking about. And then what you want to do with that is up to you. But because we have a lot of resources, every Monday on my channel, I give away free inquiry. And like Toshi said, we don't hide the ball. Every time we give away inquiry, we show you the ball. We show you that this practice or this way of meditating is helpful, but here's how you don't get to buried emotions. And then every Wednesday, for example, I give away a bypassing tip, and Toshi's going to enter in from time to time on Mondays and Wednesdays
Yeah.
to give that information away. And then what are you doing on your social media channels just for education and tools,
Yeah,
Toshi?
I'm just giving away as much as I can regarding what I've been talking about, really, of my experiences and how we can miss lots of bypassing signs, basically. And I guess that's suffering. But I'm also holding a monthly meeting to do with spirituality and non-duality with KI specifically. So if you're in this world and if you have a sense that, you know, or if you just want to go deeper into your spirituality, just come and see me, join my monthly meeting, come and ask some questions, or just sit in and listen to me or listen to anyone else ask the question. I have, you know, I'll try to keep it experiential as well. So we'll do some 2D KI to just to check. So when you do prompt something, then there's something unconscious will pop up. At least I want to show you that. So what you're mindful of might not be the whole picture, you know? When you start to ask your body, things will pop up. Then you can be mindful of that. I'm mindful of that, then, you know, so yeah, come and see me in my monthly meetings as well that I'm doing in public. So that's what I'm doing. So yeah.
I think one of the characteristics of a good helper or a teacher who's done their work is transparency and boundaries. And that's why I trust Toshi, because if you go to Toshi, he is never going to hide the ball, and neither am I. We're going to give you good tools, and we're going to tell you the limitations of them. And that's what you want in a in somebody, to be able to show the limitations of their own teaching and their own practice. That's why I trust what we're doing. But also, I will say to everybody is, if you've already read the book, it's only been 5 days, or well, it could be a month by now. Come and talk to us about mentorship, because that book is just a start. If you have having a mindfulness practice is like having a habit or a meditation. If you get safety out of it, your system is hooked into it, and you almost have to wean yourself off or transition to something deeper. And that's challenging if you have a habit for a practice that keeps you safe. So coming into a mentorship helps you by getting somebody to take a look at your practice to see how you go back to old habits of seeking safety that you might not be able to do on your own. Because look, I was a teacher for 10 years. I couldn't do this on my own. I did need a greater depth of understanding, different authority, not follow the old same teachers. And I needed eventually Dan there as like a mentor or a sounding board for me to catch me in different places. Is there anything you want to say about mentorship, Toshi, before we go? The three, oh, and also just transparency, as you'll always tell people, hey, this is 2D or 1D. That's a bypass. Here's 3D where we don't do that. You know, clarity.
Not really. You explained mentorship clearly, and then I think the reason why I think you know the mentorship will be helpful is the subtlety of the bypasses and landing that we'll be able to spot. That you know you might not be able to, because the fear of your emotions will come up too. You're gonna make that conscious, so there'll be lots of, yes, you're gonna have a honeymoon period and it's amazing, and you know everything's moving away and I'm coming out of repression, but there will be some barriers that you really have to face. You know, I don't want to scare anybody, but you really need clear pointing that we can give you, especially in relationships, because that's where the real fears will come up. It's not maybe by being able to feel anger in yourself and express it in a certain way, but when you don't stop there. Everything's a relationship and everything's a frontier. You know, you'll be put at the frontier, but you need us for there, because that's where usually even the seasoned practitioner will stop, because they don't even know they hit a barrier there. You know, they can just another grab onto another spiritual concept or whatever. Then they just stop there. But the real freedom is in relationships. And I can't stress enough that. And that's where we come back to non-duality and spirituality and everything through relationships, you know, that am I going to again? Because that's what I want to keep pointing to as a teacher of non-duality, to fully embody that truth, to be able to bring it back into your relationship, because everything is a relationship, you know. So,
Yes, that's great. Because mentorship is relationship. Yeah.
Exactly.
So I guess my last thing is, we put one link to the book for everybody because we want people to read the book. If you've already read the book and you go to kilby.com, you can look at mentorship. But also, Toshi, how do people just find you on social media if they want to work with you or learn more? Where do they go?
So I'm on mainly Instagram, toshi.matsu.naga. At Instagram, and I have my website called non-dualship, meaning non-duality and relationship together, non-dualship. I have a website like that really, but I'm mainly on kilby.com, so find me there and you know, you can't miss it. So
All right, thank you, Toshi. Come back, please.
thank you.